past 20 years has been found in Thailand. Coastal villagers caught a female river terrapin last week in a mangrove canal. Thailand's major conservation group says the discovery underlines the importance of preserving habitat. In California, the Coastal Commission has placed restrictions on sonar use by the U.S. Navy. Researchers say marine mammals such as whales and sea lions may be injured by sonar. The Navy must move its training exercises away from areas populated by marine mammals and lower sonar levels when the animals are nearby. A NASA scientist says as much as half of the world's species will disappear if massive international efforts to control global warming aren't launched within the next decade. James Hansen says if the Earth warms 1 degree Celsius, it will be warmer than it has been in 400,000 years. Los Angeles is considering following New York City's lead and banning artificial trans fat in restaurants. County supervisors voted this week to study the idea. Shareholders have asked a Georgia judge to stop Home Depot from giving its outgoing CEO Bob Nardelli a $210 million severance package. Nardelli's generous benefits and pay have long been a source of friction between the company's board and its shareholders. Light sweet crude is trading at $53.70 a barrel, and on Wall Street, the Dow is up 93, the NASDAQ is up 29 points, and the S&P 500 is up 12 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Christine Kendall.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Did you see George Bush's speech last night? He was trying to do, in effect, the impossible. Like a deer caught in the headlights is how I saw his face, with evident fear on it. He was trying to convince a whole host of people that we're wrong. Mostly the American people who's given up on Iraq. But not just the American people does he think we're wrong. He also thinks Congress is wrong. The Baker Commission is wrong, and his own generals, John Abizade, General George Casey, even the Joint Chiefs of Staff, they're all wrong. We can still win the war in Iraq. In saying that, he's actually disagreeing even with Don Rumsfeld, who wrote in a secret memo in October that it was time to turn over Iraq to the Iraqis, and Henry Kissinger, a long supporter of the president invasion, who said military victory is no longer possible. But the president still believes we can do it. Just a few more troops and magic will happen. Democracy will flourish throughout the Middle East and everyone will hold hands and sing Kumbaya. Who believes all this still? Well, my guest does, actually. His name is Michael Payne, and he is a former U.S. Air Force vet. He's been embedded with the Iraqi forces. And he returns to argue that actually the president can succeed. We can indeed create that wonderful democracy in the Middle East that everyone would love to see, but most of us realists just don't think it's possible. Michael Payne is more used to going on right-wing talk shows where everyone is told to agree with the president, so this may be a bit of a change for him. Nonetheless, we welcome him, Michael Payne, very much to the Inside Scoop.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on. So let me ask you, it seems to me that just about everyone disagrees with the president these days, the American people, Congress, the generals. Even old Dom's Rumsfeld writes in his October memo, it's time to turn over the war to the Iraqis. Why do you think we're going to succeed this time when all other times have failed?
Well, I just got back December 20th from Iraq and Afghanistan. I just want to say that I wasn't just there on a couple camps interviewing few officers for their opinions and what they had to say about it. My fourth embed trip into Iraq over the course of the last 2 years, and total of 6 months on the ground, boots outside the wire with the soldiers, the enlisted men. I've been out with them outside of the wire, off the camps, at least 175 different missions. And here's what I see. And that is, from the difference between 2004 and now, is the fact that the Iraqi army has progressed. The U.S. advisors, I ran into probably 10 to 12 U.S. advisors in different situations and different outfits, and every one of them spoke highly of, and also they were impressed with the manner and the progress of the Iraqi army soldier, and I took them to be sincere about their analysis. So they know, our advisors know, and our officers in Iraq know, and our soldiers are striving to train the Iraqi army to take over from the U.S. forces. That's their goal. Last night, as I heard President Bush, that is what he expressed, and I believe there's a sincere effort to do that and that it will succeed.
Mr. Payne, let me ask you about the Iraqi army, because I think that's certainly a major problem. Did you happen to get a chance to meet with rank-and-file Iraqi soldiers or maybe with a translator? I don't know. Do you speak Arabic? I certainly don't.
I certainly don't either.
Did you have a chance to meet with the regular Iraqi troops? Because my understanding is that the Iraqi army is, it's not exactly an Iraqi army. It's a Shiite army or a Sunni army, mostly a Shiite army, in the sense that they're not multi-ethnic units all working together for the government of Iraq. They are mostly Shiite units and Shiite units, maybe some Sunni units in Sunni areas, and they won't fight against their countrymen. Even the Shiite militias that are death squads against the Sunnis, the Shiite army isn't willing to fight against them.
Well, I read that today as they prepare to, I believe it might have even been into Haifa Street, that they, on Haifa Street there's a couple battles going on, and now they're they're preparing to go into Sadr City, which is led by Al Sadr, the infamous son of, I believe it was Hissani Sadr, maybe, but the from that Saddam Hussein had tortured and killed, and the so they're using Kurdish troops because, yes, some of the Shia have reservations, and they are afraid that maybe they would be reluctant to go in to disarm them, so they're going to use the Kurdish troops.
But don't you think that's the problem? I mean, look, you have Muqtada al-Sadr, okay? He wants power for himself. He is... I understand that Saddam Hussein mistreated him. I certainly don't respect that. But he is also mistreated. I mean, Muqtada al-Sadr is pretty much controlling the Shiite death squads, isn't he, that's going around killing the Sunnis. And the fact that you can't even send regular Iraqi army troops in to stop him, you have to send Kurdish troops, which I'm sure makes no love lost between the Kurds and the Shiites. Aren't we just inflaming ethnic tensions rather than dampening them down?
Well, first of all, I want to say that every Shiite does not hate every Sunni. I met six or more husbands who were either Sunni themselves and married to Shia women, or Shia men who were married to Sunni women. So, you know, and they expressed, this is not a nationwide hate of Sunni versus Shia, but as in this nation, you have radical groups on the fringes. You have the KKK in laced through some areas of this country, who hate blacks, they hate the Jew, they hate the Hispanic, they hate anybody that's not what they consider to be Aryan, and they're violent. You have Hispanic drug rings and gangs in L.A. and New York City and Chicago, et cetera, and they hate the blacks. You have the blacks
okay.
who hate the Hispanics.
Mr. Payne, look, I'm certainly not going to defend the KKK or Hispanic drug gangs or anything of the sort, but don't you think it's a bit of a stretch to say that the problems we face in America are anywhere like the problems they face in Iraq? I mean, I don't see the KKK, you know, building a massive army and going out and murdering blacks in the thousands. I mean, I realize the hatred's there, and a few renegades might do such a thing, but, I mean, they have an army.
Well,
Al-Sadr has an army.
Yes,
KKK doesn't have an army.
Now, let's go to the next part of Al-Sadr. Now Maliki has come to the point and issued this release to the Shia militia leaders. He has told them that they will either voluntarily disarm or they will be disarmed by the Iraqi army. And that's an ultimatum that President Bush could not get him to commit to beforehand. Al-Sadr is supported by Ahmadinejad out of Iraq, who
yes, he is.
Yes, he is, and he is getting weapons, and he is getting if he is involved in the IED planting of these roadside bombs, these are coming. The advanced IED material is coming through Iran, and some of it, and part of it, is coming out of Russia. So last night, when George Bush, I don't know why this hasn't been done before, and I don't know why the military leaders haven't brought this forth before, because continuously I have said, and but I have no control over it, that you cannot allow Syria to terrorists to come back and forth across the border bringing weapons and sending in fresh personnel, or the same with the Iranian border. So now it seems we are going to crack down on these borders and not just make it a no man's land where they have free entry and exit, but we are apparently going to start patrolling them, and we have the equipment in our surveillance capabilities and airplanes, as we have just seen with the AC-135 Spectre. That is a formidable aircraft and can destroy its target, and they have the capability to pick up personnel that would be trying to hide in the dark through thermal equipment.
Mr. Payne, let me interrupt you just because we have to go to a break. Just to say, I firmly support the redeployment of our troops to the borders, and indeed that's what the Baker Hamilton Commission and many in Congress are saying. But to say that Maliki has changed his mind, the same prime minister that refused to allow the troops to go into al-Sadr city just a few months ago, and that he's really committed to taking out his own support, I don't see it happening. But I want to get more comment from you and also from our listeners at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Do you believe the environment is issue number one? Does the idea of genetically modified food cause you to lose your appetite? Do you prefer green over greed? Do rising sea levels and vanishing polar ice cause you concern about our planet and what we are doing to it? Would you like news with attitude on the environment, organics, renewable sources of energy? Well, then join me, John Fox, for Foxed Up. Weekdays, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. in the UK, and 9 a.m. here in Sydney, where conversation radio becomes conservation radio, and we turn it straight up to 11. Right here on the Head On Radio Network.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, "What if?" Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov. From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. President George W. Bush went on air last night to argue for one more chance for his Iraqi policy, despite the fact that every other thing they've called is wrong, from the fact that they said that, hey, the war would pay for itself, Iraq had enough oil, to Dick Cheney's claim they were going to throw roses at our feet. And some of the early neocons' idea that, hey, we'd have 30,000 troops by 2003 and be out by 2004. All of that was wrong, of course, and the president has admitted that mistakes were made. But now he says, now you have to trust me. This time I'm right. Yes, Prime Minister Maliki didn't allow us to go into al-Sadr city before. Yes, the Iraq army is riven with ethnic violence, the same kind, actually, that's in the Civil War and the broader population. But this time will be different. Michael Payne, my guest, is an embedded reporter who still believes in, I don't know if it's stay the course or surge the course today, but my question, I guess, is when is it over, Michael Payne? When do we finally say, you know what, Mr. President, you're living in a dream world. It's time to bring the American troops home.
Well, number one, it's over when we get the Iraqi forces up to speed, which they started from the ground up to do this. They could not. I heard the ridiculous proposal that we should have just not disbanded the Iraqi army, but just switched them over like it was going to be quite that easy, when the leadership of that army was totally Sunni, and that would have been a total hoax. So what we had to do and are having to do is filter through those who are coming to sign up to be parts of this. And the Iraqi people, I've heard the criticism in the press a lot that the Iraqi people don't care. Why should we care? Well, that's not true, because they lined. I remember one time in 2004, they were lined up and 300 of them were killed with a dual car bombing down on a main street in Baghdad, because they were there to enlist into the military to try to bring their country to a place where their children and their families can live somewhat of a normal life. Maliki has to know as much as George Bush has to know that we're getting short on patience over here as a country. And the plug is going to get pulled. He hears Pelosi. He hears Harry Reid. He hears Ted Kennedy. He knows what's going on with that. So why would he do it now? He's going to do it now because, number one, he's in a more stable place than he was 6 months ago as far as Sadr goes. Sadr has been an ally of his because he could manipulate Maliki for a certain distance. But that time is over, I believe. And we need to. How long are we going to be there? I believe we can start drawing down in a year. I believe with these extra troops going in, and I send out daily reports about activity going on in Iraq right now, and we don't hear these things on the news, such as 50 or not. Let's go to this: the weapons caches that are being discovered. The terrorists that are being apprehended, and a lot of this is being done with the Iraqi army backed up with U.S. advisors.
But Mr. Payne, you have a government that is not working. I mean, every time we capture one of the insurgents, you have Iraqi judges letting them go. You have Maliki, who has his power based on the Shiites. The only reason he's in power is because the Shiites voted him. The only reason he's there is because of Muqtada al-Sadr's support. I don't think we should risk the lives of another 22,000 American troops on the idea that we can believe this guy who, let's face it, has double-crossed us in the past. We tried to invade al-Sadr city before, and he said no. We have a long experience, and I'm sure you agree with me on this, of leaders of Arab countries, Arab dictators, heck, Saddam Hussein as well, who say one thing to us in English and say quite another thing in Arabic. I mean, as far as the Iraqi people are concerned, I saw a recent poll that I found fascinating. 80% blame the United States for the violence. 60% think it's perfectly justified to kill American troops. 60%, and the vast majority want us to leave. Now, I think a civil war is on its way. I think it's already happening. But when we get in the middle and, in effect, try to fight both sides in the civil war, we're fighting the Sunnis and the Shiites. I think the only thing they agree on is that they want to kill us, and we get caught in the crossfire. If we leave, don't we at least remove some of the gasoline from this fire?
No. We do not remove the gasoline from the fire. If we leave now or in 6 months without having helped them establish some kind of a legitimate government and a man at the top who is going to strive to bring justice across the nation, not just for his sect, but for the Sunni, the Shia, and the Kurd. As one Iraqi described to me, I said to him, and I'd just been there 2 days, I asked him, I said, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but it's being thrown around in the press right now in the States that we might pull out in 6 months, or the Democratic leadership is going to pull for that. And I said, what is your comment to that? And this Iraqi says to me, he says, right now there are two rivers in Iraq, the Tigris and the Euphrates. If you pull out of here before we are able to establish a legitimate government with that will bring some security and justice to this nation for all, there will be three rivers, and the third will be a river of blood. Then you will have your civil war. But it will be run, and it will be financed, and it will be ramrodded by Ahmadinejad and the World Islamic Council from Iran, who, though they are helping that radical, who is out of his mind and wicked, al-Sadr, at the moment, to destabilize things there. It will. They will take control of Iraq.
Mr. Payne, look. I agree that a civil war may very well occur. In fact, it's already occurring now. I understand that.
No, it's not already occurring now.
And the Sunnis had they been fighting each other for thousands of years during the 1980s, as you well know, you had the Sunnis in Iraq fighting the Shia of Iran, and 1 million people died. I'm not disputing that can happen. All right, it has happened. I don't dispute that. The question is, why do we want to put American troops in the crossfire? One of the interesting things about the Sunnis, and they've got some al-Qaeda support. They didn't, by the way, under Saddam Hussein, but they do now. And the Shias, and they have some Iranian support. Again, they didn't under Saddam Hussein, but they do now. Is that our two greatest enemies, al-Qaeda and Iran, and I think they are our two greatest enemies, if they're fighting each other and killing each other, I don't know. I kind of see that as a victory. These bad guys are killing each other, and we get out of the middle.
Well,
what do you think?
The trouble is, all Iraqi are not bad guys. I was on the ground a considerable time among the Iraqi citizens, walking and along with the American patrols on the ground through the villages, intermingling with the Iraqi, and I was given the privilege and even some instance, the U.S. Or the Army platoon sergeant, had he been instructed or was it he desired, he went to lengths to offer up their interpreter that was walking with us to speak with the Iraqi citizens. And here's how I judge who's with us and who's against us in Iraq. And I was on a lot of streets. I was in Amaria, Mamadia, the Sunni Triangle. I was in Camp Taji, off Camp Taji, and they're finding 5 to 15 roadside bombs a day up Highway Tampa. I was over in Baghdad and spent considerable time over there. And this is how I gauge, are they with us or against us? And that's the reaction of their children to the soldiers. And I'm talking young children that aren't old enough to be manipulated and put on a show for the press guy that's on hand. When the convoys are not, the platoons are heading down the street in the Humvees, they see the dust coming or they hear the roar of the Humvees coming, and they're running towards the Humvees waving and laughing. And it's not to get a piece of candy. It is because they like to associate with the U.S. soldier. They're friendly towards the U.S. soldier. They climb all over the soldier when they would dismount and be in these neighborhoods. Now, not every neighborhood is like that, and not every child is like that, but 75 to 80% of these children love the U.S. soldier, and if they were home hearing hate talk towards the U.S. and the U.S. soldier, they would not have been acting that way towards our troops.
Look, Mr. Payne, I have no doubt that those people that do come out to greet the soldiers like the soldiers, and those people that don't come out and those that shoot at our soldiers are not big fans. I'm just talking about national polls. 60% of Iraqis think it's justified to kill Americans. And Maliki is put there by the same al-Sadr that you and I don't like. I'm not defending al-Sadr, but to suggest that Maliki is suddenly a hero and he's suddenly going to do the right thing and we're going to risk doubling down on our bet, taking all of our troops, every last combat brigade, every last National Guard, so that we have no one if North Korea acts up, no one if Iran further acts up or they need us in Darfur. We're going to take every last American soldier and try to police a civil war where they don't speak the language, they don't have the training, they don't even have the cultural knowledge. I mean, heck, I'm not defending Saddam Hussein, but to kill him on a Muslim holiday was a gross, bad idea. And to say that they can actually do the job, I just think it's wishful thinking. We got to take a break. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back debating the surge right after this.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network. What's a conversation like on Head On with Bob Kincaid? This is what it's like.
Let's go. Let's talk to our good friend Phil down in Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, Bob. Good to hear you, too. I want to remind people that the military take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And when people say they're fighting for our freedom by defending the Constitution, which defines our freedoms and supposedly is there to protect them, that's what it really means. Not doing whatever this outrageous civilian leadership dictates that it does.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Conversation at its finest. Weeknights, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Only at Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to irs.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's irs.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
from Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm debating the Bush policy in Iraq, specifically the Bush plan to surge the troops in Iraq. He calls it a surge. Others call it an escalation because there's really no date for drawing it down. I'm debating it with Michael Payne. He is a former U.S. Air Force vet. He's an embedded reporter. He's one of the last, it seems, that still supports the Bush policy. Poor Michael Payne, you're used to debating these issues on right-wing talk radio. I guess for most people agree with you. Is that fair?
I don't know that I would. Yes, I've been on some right-wing, and then I've been on some, I guess the other wing is left, so...
Well, good. I'm glad because I think it's important to debate these issues and for us to talk to each other, which is one of the reasons why I'm having you on the show. I realize the dream in Iraq. I mean, I do. And I respect it. I think if we could get a democratic Iraq, a democratic Syria, a democratic Iran, where people of different ethnicities could live together in peace and freedom and all, you know, have low oil prices and greet us with roses and American statues of American presidents. I mean, that would be a glorious thing, but it seems to me that's a bit of fantasy land. I want to give you an example that I bring from the British. Now, the British in Northern Ireland, they spoke the language, unlike us. It was English. Very few of our troops speak Arabic, as you know. They knew Irish culture, certainly, far more than we know Arabic culture. They knew how to talk, and they also had the training as peacekeeping. In 1972, during the terrorist acts in Northern Ireland, Britain had 43,000 troops in Northern Ireland. If you look at it as a comparison to the population and you ratchet up to the population of Iraq, we're talking it would be the equivalent of 750,000 troops. And they couldn't pacify the Irish because the Catholics wanted one thing and the Protestants wanted another thing. Isn't there a huge difference between fighting a conventional war, like fighting the Soviet Union, like frankly dethroning Saddam Hussein in 02, and policing a civil war? And isn't the latter much, much harder to do?
Again, they're not in civil war yet. That's something that a couple of the large media publications spoke forward. It's not civil war yet. I've been on the ground in Sunni area, and I've been on the ground in Shia area. There are factions who, for whatever their motive, the Sunni, a lot of their motive is the simple fact that when Saddam Hussein was in power, they were in privilege. They're not in that privilege anymore, for there are 20 or 25% of the population, and the Shia are 55 or 60% of the population, and they are the ones, the Shia showed up at the polls, and they are the ones, obviously, that elected Maliki, et cetera, et cetera. Maliki has to know that if the whole place falls into turmoil, be it by Shia or be it by Sunni, that his time is short and that his tenure is short. And Maliki, I don't believe, wants Ahmadinejad taking control of Iraq because he will, and the Iranians will run it in that case. Now, I go back to this again.
I'm not disputing your facts, just to be clear. I'm disputing your conclusions. Whether we call it a civil war or not, Northern Ireland, I don't think most people would call a civil war in 1972. It wasn't a civil war, but there were very, very strong ethnic tensions. There were terrorist acts by both sides, and the British couldn't quell it, even though, heck, they knew the language and they knew the culture. You know, in Vietnam, there was a government as well that we installed in place in South Vietnam, and I'm sure America preferred it over the North Vietnamese. I don't dispute that either, but they wanted to stay in power. But in essence, they couldn't. I mean, do you think that, for example, we could have won the war in Vietnam if we just stayed another 10 years and surged troops there? Or do you agree that that was a war we couldn't win as well?
No, actually, there's a couple things about Vietnam. Number one, we were winning the war in Vietnam, and General Gap, after the war was over and things were settled, he admitted that they were very close at one point to throwing the towel in and surrendering. We were pounding them in the north, and then all of a sudden we had rules of engagement. We are not going to do this, and we're not going to bomb that known targets, and we pulled back, and we became politically correct to a certain extent about what we were doing there. Also, the media in this nation during Vietnam constantly was criticizing the efforts of our troops in Vietnam and calling our young men and serving in the military there baby killers, accusations of atrocities, and I'm not going to deny that obviously we would all be fools to say it never happened, but it was not common practice by the fine young men who...
And I haven't done that. I haven't criticized our troops. Frankly, I think our troops are trying as best they can in a very difficult situation. But yeah. But when you raise the question of we still could have won the war in Vietnam, Vietnam was America's longest war. This war isn't as long as that yet, but it is longer than World War II. And, you know, we were in Vietnam for more than 10 years. You, I guess, wanted to stay another 5 or 10 years. One of my concerns is when do you throw in the towel? When do you say, you know what, it's just not working? They told us we wouldn't need as many troops. They told us they'd greet us with roses. They told us it wouldn't cost anything. Everything they've told us is wrong. Why should we believe them now?
First of all, let us make sure you know what my motives for even going to Iraq are.
Okay, what are they? I'm curious because they're not weapons of mass destruction, I don't think, and they're not Al-Qaeda, I don't think.
No, I didn't say the motive for us being there. My motive for going over and going out of the wire, getting shot at, and putting myself at risk, okay? I like the
Okay.
And my motive is this. My motive is the welfare of the United States soldier. I was over there, and on Thanksgiving Day, I'd ridden as a reporter 4 days on a medevac chopper. So when they would get a call, they needed transport medevac. Just about everything over there is done medevac because you just don't run ambulances up and down the street, especially if they have a U.S. flag on the side of them.
Because they get bombed.
Well, there's that possibility, and you know, we have rules of engagement and rules of going off camp over there and out of the wire, and that is you just don't take a one Humvee and go out of the wire for security reasons and not to invite confrontation. So it's a...
I don't blame them because where there are more American troops, there are more people getting shot at. I mean, that's a real problem. I agree.
So, you know, on Thanksgiving Day, we went to a... to pick up a soldier who had been turned out killed in action, KIA, hit by a sniper shot. And as we picked this young man up, you know, so I am sitting in this Black Hawk medevac chopper, and here's this dead soldier in there with me, along with the rest of the crew, of course. And there's a lot of reflection going on there about that, and I can only imagine the pain that the parent of that man and the other men who have died there go through. I can only imagine this. But these soldiers are signing up and they're volunteering to serve in the United States military. They're reenlisting. They're not being forced to stay in the military.
Well, now hold on, Mr. Payne. I mean, some are reenlisting. I don't dispute that some are, but let's face it. We've got a real shortage here. We have National Guard troops that don't want to serve in Iraq that are being forced to serve there. We have people that want their terms to end that are being forced to extend their terms. And frankly, I know a number of vets, and I am not in any way insulting the personal courage of you or of any of our troops in Iraq, but I do know a number of people who signed up after September 11, 2001 because they wanted to fight Al-Qaeda, they wanted to fight in Afghanistan, and were shocked to see them being withdrawn from Afghanistan, where Al-Qaeda is recouping its forces, and sent to attack a country, a stable dictatorship that never attacked us. I think we have real problems. In fact, I think, and I want to know if you agree with me, that the only reason Bush has only suggested 22,000 troops rather than 200,000 troops is because we just don't have enough combat troops to go around. There are just not enough people volunteering to fight this war. You disagree?
I believe that at this point, the situation, and when I use the term, we have come to the crossroads here, or the fork in the road. It's throw in the towel, or it is, and George Bush is obviously trying to salvage the war, just not so that he is right, but that he believes in why he's over there, and I believe...
Yeah, I think it's to prove he's right. I think the reason he's there is to try to salvage his reputation, and I think Americans are going to die in the middle of it. And look, we've done surges before.
No,
in December of 2005, we had more troops. We had 160,000 troops in Iraq. We had more troops than we're going to have after the surge this time. But we didn't win the war in December 2005 either. I'm just trying to figure out what's different this time that we're going to magically win when we've tried this strategy before and it's failed before.
We've had 2 years now to train up more and better trained and more reliable Iraqi citizens who are now soldiers who do want to see this effort succeed in Iraq. That's a reason right there. And these
U.S. Well, I mean, for example, let's talk about that. One of the things that George Bush pointed out in his speech was that we were going to bring the national police, that they're going to go door to door. Now, the national police, from what I've seen out of Iraq, are universally feared, particularly by the Sunnis, because the national police have a lot of Shiite militants. They come in, they knock on the door, they might just do some ethnic cleansing. So we're going to rely on this group that in many ways has been infiltrated, has been corrupted by Muqtada al-Sadr's men. We don't know, as in Vietnam, I'm sorry to say, we don't know who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. We might give weapons and train an Iraqi army or a national police, and they turn around and give those weapons to al-Sadr's men or al-Qaeda, and in essence, we are financing the very bombs that are being used to kill our troops. I mean, do you dispute that?
I dispute it in whole, but I don't dispute it that there are never any cases of it. You know, you can't take the 5%, and you were talking about polls earlier about what the Iraqi 80% want us out of there, 60% believe we're responsible, et cetera. I can go over there and I can create you a poll to say anything I want to say. I'm telling you, I was on the ground. I was among them. I watched for... I didn't go over there to create a story. I went over there to witness and then come back and tell you what I saw. I am not a lockstep George Bush fan. Okay? I'm not a lockstep George Bush fan. So
and I'm not disputing what you saw. What I'm saying is this, in my belief, the Iraqis that are going to talk to you, that are going to talk to American troops, that frankly are going to speak English, and that's no slam on you, I don't speak Arabic either, but we have so few people there that actually are mingling with ordinary Iraqis. Most of the reporters that are there are taken there by our military, shown the Iraqis that our military wants those reporters to see, and I don't think we're seeing ordinary Iraqi sentiment, but I do know this, we know that the civilians that are being killed in Iraq are increasing exponentially. In the last 6 months, we actually had a surge. People don't talk about it very much. The last 6 months, we had 12,000 more troops in Iraq, and we saw a massive surge in the civilian population. We had three times as many die in the last 6 months, 17,000 proven deaths, and there may be many more than the proven, and 6,000 at the beginning of the year. Many say that hundreds of thousands of Iraqis have been killed. I mean, I don't dispute that you talk to these people, sir, but isn't it possible that you're just not talking to the people that are causing the problems?
That are causing the problem?
Yeah, I mean, the Al-Qaeda's men, Shiite, Sunni militias.
I did not have access to al-Sadr. No, I didn't
right.
have access to him.
Of course not.
I mean, you don't have to go talk to this man to see what he's doing. I mean,
He's a thug. Let's say it.
Yeah,
he's a thug.
He is a thug. He's a murderer, and he leads murderers to. And that's whatever led him into that position or into that direction. Revenge, hate. He's a short little guy, so maybe he's got a Napoleonic complex. I don't know. But what I'm saying to you is, there are many Iraqis over there that are. They want a peaceful nation, just like anyone else wants to raise their children. They don't want a bloodbath going on all the time. And I spoke with at least a half a dozen Iraqis again who were married to a person from the opposite sect that we're talking about here. And so
why don't we try this? Let me ask you this. Even Henry Kissinger says that there's no military solution at this point. Instead of a military surge, why don't we try a diplomatic surge?
Well,
why don't we try to get the three groups together, Shiites, Sunnis, and Kurds, and if they need to divide lines and split up the country, fine, so be it. But try to get them to work together, and at the same time, if we withdraw U.S. forces and the Iraqis see that they can't rely on us, they can't blame us for all their problems, Maliki can't keep al-Sadr doing whatever he wants, because frankly, I think Maliki's an enabler. I don't think he's out to protect Iraq. I think he's out to protect al-Sadr and the Shiites. Personally, you may disagree. But why don't we try to withdraw to the borders, try to prevent infiltration of al-Qaeda in Iran? This is largely the Baker-Hamilton report, a bipartisan report. It's not just a Democratic idea. And try a diplomatic surge, and I'm maybe different from everybody else here. I support an independent Kurdistan, and I think they've been pretty pro-American. I'm willing to leave troops up in the north to protect those people who I think do appreciate American troops and do appreciate democracy, but largely say, look, you know, if we leave, there's going to be a massive civil war. This is your last chance. But I think with us there, we're enabling them. We're enabling them to blame us for everything. We're enabling them to go after us. We're enabling Maliki to try to get what he can, and the Sunnis trying to get what he can. I think we are the problem, militarily, we are the problem, not the solution. Whereas diplomatically, we could be the solution. You agree or disagree?
I disagree in a certain extent in that James Baker didn't get it done the first time through. He's not going to get it done this time through. That report came forward with the suggestion of bringing in Syria and Iran into the negotiation when they are the primary behind-the-scenes instigators. They are not interested in working out a peaceful solution. Forming a Palestinian state in Israel is the solution to what's going on in Iraq is the dumbest statement I've ever heard.
I'll agree with you on that. My point is not about that part of the report. My part is about the part of the report that said that, in effect, we are causing the problem, that we are bringing gasoline, if you will, to the fire, that they are relying on us, they're depending on us, and if we withdraw, it forces the Iraqis to see the inevitable, to look over the cliff, if you will, to decide whether they want to jump. If they jump, heck, it's their country. And if they don't jump, terrific, then they can come to a peaceful solution. But I don't see how we help solve the problem.
Okay, here's all I'm saying to you. I'm not saying stay 10 more years. You didn't hear that come out of my lips.
Okay, 2 years? 3 years? What are you saying?
I would say 2 years is plenty. I'm okay with that, but 6 months is not quite long enough. That's what I'm against.
The Democrats that I saw were proposing 18 months to withdraw to the borders to protect against infiltration against Iraq and Syria. They weren't arguing for a withdrawal tomorrow. There may be some Democrats arguing that, but that's not the congressional plan. The congressional plan is a planned withdrawal of troops over time to be fully gone in 18 months. That's not too different, is it?
Well, I haven't. Then you're seeing a plan that hasn't been put in front of me, because I've never heard 18 months come out of a Democrat's mouth yet about this. All I've heard come out of their mouths is 6 months. And as far as 18 months goes, I think even George Bush is fine with that segment. But, you know, the Maliki, only a fool would think that we're not serious about, you know, this rhetoric over here, that we're not serious about coming out of there, and something better start moving forward. And again, I will send you the daily reports I get about the progress that you never hear about on ABC, NBC. If you would like to have these on a daily basis so you can review them, and then you'll see what's going on, which involves the Iraqi army, I will do this, and you can get any of your listeners by emailing me, and I will put you on the distro list at mpain@takeastandministries, which is plural, .org. And these are legitimate reports. They're not doctored, they're not pampered, and they're not armyanized. They are straight up, and they're sincere about them, and there's some good things going on. Now,
Mr. Payne.
Yes.
I mean, we've had cherry picking of intelligence before. I'm not disputing your reports, but they're anecdotal. This good thing happened, this good thing happened, this good thing happened. If you look overall, what you see is deaths growing exponentially, attacks growing exponentially, not just Americans dying, although that is increasing exponentially along with the wounded, but Iraqis dying in massive numbers. That doesn't mean that good things aren't happening in some places in Iraq. I'm sure there are some good places happening, but what the reports I've read, including the Baker-Hamilton report, is that the Iraqi government isn't functioning, that the Iraqi army isn't functioning, that the national police is working more for al-Sadr than they are for Maliki, that the Iraqis themselves aren't doing the job. And they're focusing, really, they're hedging their bets. The Sunnis are protecting themselves by sticking with the Sunnis, the Shiites by sticking with the Shiites. In effect, we're becoming to have three countries anyway. And so how can we want it more than the Iraqi people themselves? I understand that there's some that want it. I feel for them, frankly. I fear a whole boat people kind of thing, with a bunch of them trying to come to the United States when this whole thing falls through. In fact, I fully expect that, which is one reason why I've suggested if we stay up in the north, the Kurdistan, at least those Iraqis that helped us would have a place to go. They could go to the northern part, which I think is the safest part. That's been my suggestion. But at the end of the day, don't the Iraqis have to want it more than we do?
Well, absolutely they have to want it. But let me say this to you. You say that the violence has increased in the last 6 months. The press has helped with that. They have encouraged the terrorists. If you kill enough of our soldiers, you will break our will. And the Democrats' leadership have said, we want out of there. You elect us. We're coming out of there in no more than 6 months. So if I'm an Al-Qaeda leader, I'm going to have every man that can carry any artillery shell out to a hole out there along the roadside, blowing up every U.S. soldier I can blow up. Because I don't care about those guys that are fighting for me. So if they get killed in the mix, that's okay too. So I tell you that the newspapers, with their constant and the media with their constant rhetoric of pulling out, we can't lose one more soldier. And let me tell you this: I'm not one of these guys that thinks like some in Vietnam thought that the kill ratio, if we only lose one for their 10 or 50 or whatever, that's okay. Every American soldier counts to me, because I think one man dead is too many. But these terrorists are not going to be content when the United States military pulls out of Iraq. They're not content now. They're planning to do whatever they can do to have massive deaths in this nation. They hate the United States, and it's not about Iraq. And it's not.
They do hate us. I'm afraid our time is running out, Michael Payne. I want to thank you for coming here on the air. I would just conclude by saying, yes, they hate us, and I want to fight them where they live, places like Afghanistan, places like Somalia these days. I want to stop the genocide in Darfur. I want to confront Iran and North Korea, but we can't do it if we place all our bets on an effort in Iraq that I think is increasingly losing. I've enjoyed this debate. I promise I'll have it again. In fact, I've already invited Michael Payne to appear on my television show, which will be broadcast right here at RadioInsideScoop.com and locally on Channel 10 in Northern Virginia. He's going to come on in about a week, so check the news for that. And he's going to be debating a vet, another recent Iraqi vet, who has a very different view than he does. I'll shut up and let the two vets talk at that time. Michael Payne, thank you for this very strong debate. It's the kind that Americans are having all across the country, and I appreciate your having with me here on the Inside Scoop.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, that's it for the Inside Scoop. Tune in on, tomorrow I'm on XM, and then this Sunday we've got a terrific show at 6:30 p.m., talking about outsourcing, how the problem that's affecting the nation, and then back here on the Head On Radio Network Monday at 2 p.m., where we're going to talk about Martin Luther King and his legacy. That's it for the Inside Scoop. Tune in tomorrow at 2, and that's it. This is Mark Levine signing off.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch.
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the Guy James Show. Good to have you along with us today, coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, Fort Myers, Naples area. And glad to have every single one of you along with us today. Yes, we are. We're here in the studio. I'm your host, Guy James, along with Billy Shears, musical director of the Guy James Show. And, of course, out in the lobby there, I see the official Guy James Show Yorkies, Sophie and Kukla, playing around. So I bring them to the studio just about every day. Not every day, but just about. They like to run around out there and have a good time. It's got a tile floor, so no problem if you know what I mean. Ah, yes, good to have all of you along with us today. A big day. man, what a news cycle it's been the last 24 hours, huh? How many times have you ever seen a countdown clock on TV to let us know what time the president's speech was going to be on? How many times have you seen that? How cynical am I? This fellow gives a speech last night about all this, and today he has a Medal of Honor ceremony. You don't suppose that's just a coincidence, do you? No, certainly not. Is he above using a Medal of Honor ceremony to try and gain himself some points with the public? Certainly not. The man will do anything. And then he heads on out to Fort Bragg. I think it was Fort Bragg. And hang around with the soldiers out there, which makes him look, you know, very, very, very military-like. He always likes to hang out with the soldiers and let them know. Let them know how much he cares about them. Yeah. Yeah, it was I don't know who got the medal today. It was a Medal of Honor ceremony. I did see that. Somebody who had saved the life of one of their... I thought it was... I can't remember the name, but it was a Medal of Honor ceremony anyway. I take it that most of you, by now, have had a chance to at least find out the details of Junior's speech. If you didn't have the guts to watch it, I did. I took it for you. I took the bullet. I sat there and I took it. I watched every minute of it, and it was pain. It was agony. It was suffering of the highest degree. But I did it. I did it for you. You buy that? Well, I did. I watched it. And I have to tell you that prior to last night,
I thought it had almost all of the text to Junior Bush's speech. I thought it had all of it. I didn't know there was any more. And the part I didn't have is the part that I went to bed worrying about last night. Not only worrying, furious, livid. You know, we've joked, we've had our fun with Junior Bush, but the fun is over. In his pathetic speech last night, he finally showed the American public what we've been saying for some time now, and what he's showed them is that the man is he's absolutely psychopathic. Psychotic, call it what you want. He's delusional. He's a very delusional man who has no intentions whatsoever of letting go of his dream, that crazy dream of his, some kind of a dream, of some kind of glorious victory in Iraq.